Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
The Sand Mountain Dunes is a popular off-road vehicle site belonging to the BLM. Promoting recreation on public lands is a mandate of the department. But what happens when the fervor of the off-roaders begins to run over the rights of a wonderful little butterfly that has established its species on the edge of the dunescape? We find out when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wildside News. ...2006 is going to be a year when many people begin to take a stand in defense of nature. In many cases, people will feel there is no choice but to take a stand for the wonder. There are many ways to do so, from the bravery of a Captain Watson to the prayers of the children, and then there are those who endure the pains of public advocacy. The story you are about to hear reflects just one of the many that is ongoing around the nation, as people put their spirits between the rubber and the road. Battles to preserve the wonders on this planet, in many cases, are unique, and in many cases, they seem to recycle similar challenges. And in this particular case, we're going to be talking about just exactly that situation. Another battle between outdoor recreationists and a butterfly. And to help us understand what's happening is Karen Schombach, who is the California Director of PEER, which is the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Karen, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thank you.
Now, you're joining us from Northern California, where you have your office. Just tell us a little bit how the weather is today.
Today it's raining, kind of a nice, constant, gentle, warm rain.
Have you had enough rain in the last couple of weeks to keep you satisfied?
Well, in December, we had average an inch a day, so
wow.
quite a wet December, and January has been much the same. So yesterday was nice, and today it's raining, and that's sort of our winter routine, a day of rain, a day of sun, but this has been a little rainier than normal.
Well, let's get on to the topic that you're very much involved in right now, and this has to do with the preservation of a butterfly. We've heard these stories before. Give us a background on the Sand Mountain blue butterfly and why this suddenly is in the news now.
This is actually an issue that I've been working on for about 2 years. Sand Mountain is a small dune system east of Reno, near Fallon, Nevada. And as most of those systems are, it's extremely beautiful. The dunes are surrounded by some vegetated areas, and it's those surrounding vegetated areas that are being contested by the off-roaders who are opposed to protection of the buckwheat, which is the host plant for the butterfly. There's about 1,000 acres, not sure the exact number, but there's quite an extensive, 1,000 acres or so for riding, which nobody is contesting. They're not going to really hurt much riding in the dunes themselves. But the surrounding area into which the use has been expanding over the years is extremely valuable habitat. Not only the buckwheat, which grows only there and is host to this butterfly, which only exists there, but there's actually a number of plants and animals that are unique to that little particular ecosystem. And so in preserving the vegetation, in particular the buckwheat, we would also be preserving a number of other unique plants and animals. The off-road community has been expanding their use there. There is actually a pretty impactful PowerPoint that BLM produced, which shows the expansion of the trails and the vegetated area over the years, and it's pretty shocking when you see expansion of use over the years. That it's pretty shocking because this is a rare plant and a rare animal, or the butterfly's rare insect. BLM had proposed to go from an open riding area, meaning that people could pretty much go wherever they wanted, to a designated route system, which we support. court. Unfortunately, BLM insisted that the designated system be completely voluntary, meaning that if somebody didn't stay on the designated trails, there was no citation. They were just trying to get voluntary cooperation from the off-roaders. We had warned them. I wrote them a letter when they proposed this because I have some experience with that kind of management here in California, and it just failed abysmally at a place called Clear Creek. But nonetheless, that's what they decided to do. And so for the past 2 years, they've had this voluntary designated route system, and it's been just an abysmal failure, as we predicted. So the impacts to the buckwheat and the butterfly and the other unique species have continued. So now the BLM is proposing a designated route system that is not voluntary, and that's kind of the status of it right now. They are also coming up with a conservation plan in response to a petition to list the butterfly that was presented to Fish and Wildlife Service by Center for Biological Diversity and PIER and other groups. And in response to that petition to list, they're developing a so-called conservation plan, which I expect they will say means that they don't need to list the butterfly.
One of the challenges here is the fact that this particular butterfly only exists in that very specific spot. It isn't as if this is just one area in which the butterfly exists, but it is literally limited because it is totally dependent on that particular plant species. So as the plant species diminishes, so goes the butterfly. So this truly has to do with an issue of extinction.
It does. Now, the off-roaders have suggested that BLM grow the buckwheat and transplant it to other places. My philosophy, as a lot of other people, is that it's here, it's growing there, it's doing well when not being trampled by off-road vehicles. We need to preserve it where it exists. The likelihood of being, you know, successful in transplanting it, you know, that's very speculative. And the BLM's regulations require them to give deference to vegetation and wildlife over off-road vehicles, and that's what they need to do. There's plenty of places to ride, and even at Sand Mountain, there's a huge area of sand dunes where they can ride. You know, we're not opposed to some use on the edges of the vegetated area, but we don't want them riding right through the buckwheat and the butterfly habitat.
Now, is it the type of situation where the plant cannot exist in the open dunes? Of course, the sands shift on a regular basis, and that's one of the reasons it's difficult to declare a trail specifically on the dunes themselves. So around that area, the plant grows. Am I right so far?
Right. The riding would remain open in the dunes itself. Nobody's suggesting restricting riding in the dunes, but it's the area around the dunes where there is vegetation providing habitat for both the butterfly and other species, that we want a designated trail system that actually protects the vegetation and the animals in it.
So this would be the type of thing where there's a designated trailhead into the dune area, and all riders must abide by that?
The access to the dunes itself is already very easy. You know, there's parking lots right next to the dunes, so you can go from your car, you know, literally right into the dunes. To get to the vegetated area, you have to go through or around the dunes. Access to the dunes isn't an issue, but what's happening is people are going through the dunes into the surrounding vegetation, and that's where the damage is occurring.
It's just really carelessness and a total inconsideration and lack of concern for this issue. How are you trying to educate, obviously, within any sort of community of off-road vehicle riders and drivers, there are those who really do try to maintain responsible riding habits and take these things into consideration. Obviously, those people are probably trying to work with you.
Not really.
That's sad to hear. I'm trying to figure out how would you lead to some sort of resolution.
Well,
are you considering fencing, for example, or something like that? Or?
Well, you know, certainly we're in favor of education, but not as a substitute for management. And the problem here is that BLM, Bureau of Land Management, which is supposed to be managing the area, off-road community, look, there are limits. And you're free to ride in the dunes, but you can't ride where you're going to do irreparable harm. They just have not been willing to do that. And in fact have excluded the environmental community from the most of the discussion, despite our repeated request to be kept apprised of meetings, etc. They only communicate with the off-road community because for some reason they seem to fear them and their political clout. They haven't made a really an attempt to educate the users.
Well, if I can say so, that just doesn't seem reasonable. It seems as if there should always be an attempt to try to create some sort of compromise, and that just doesn't make sense.
Well, I agree. I agree, and I don't know if it's because, I don't know what it is, but they certainly have had lots of opportunity to work with the environmental community. We've certainly expressed, you know, our interest and our willingness to work with them, but we just get dead silence from BLM and not interested in having our participation in this process, which is sad because, I mean, we are going to participate. Now, whether we do it, you know, in a collaborative way or if we have to result to lawsuits, but, we, you know, we are going to participate, and it's a shame that they don't do it in a more collaborative way.
In the past, in such situations, what are some models that have been utilized? If you start with education, how is that typically done?
You know, unfortunately, on this subject, education by both BLM and the Forest Service has not been very adequate. Even though the off-roaders, they say they would like to have education rather than enforcement, we really aren't getting either one. And a big part of the problem is the media, the commercials that show ATVs or dirt bikes or dune buggies, you know, ripping through habitat. That's the sort of thing that the off-roaders see, and so they get the impression that that's okay. And I really don't see BLM doing anything to counter that. Now, you asked about fencing. 2 years ago, when the designated route system was proposed, the off-road community, some of the clubs, said, because the incursions off of the designated routes has been well documented, and it's just incredibly flagrant. I mean, thousands and thousands of incursions. There's photo documentation of all of this. The off-roaders said that they would fence along some trails. And so there were three trails where they were allowed to put up fencing. And it was, you know, that orange kind of storm fencing. They put up that. They promised that they would install it and maintain it. Well, it's down. I mean, they did not maintain it. They did put it in, but they did not maintain it, and it just fell into disrepair, and it's finally, I mean, it's just all on the ground. So their willingness to, you know, take some responsibility for management themselves, you know, it just gets called into question.
Well, it sounds as if at least someone within that community made an effort. Whether or not it was successful or not is a whole other question, but at least they may have tried. But what I find so strange is the fact that the government seems to be so irresponsible in terms of not trying to formulate a strategy and a plan to deal with this. How long have you been working on trying to get the government involvement in this?
About 2 years. But the trouble is that their involvement is not it's not helping the situation. Their management really amounts to a lack of management and trying to, like say they, you know, they wanted the off-road community to voluntarily stay out of the habitat, and that didn't work, and they've known that for 2 years. They should have taken action, you know, within 6 months when they saw that it wasn't working. And in those 2 years, there's been, you know, significant further degradation of the habitat. I don't so much blame the off-road community as I do BLM because BLM is the one that's supposed to be managing it.
Now, at this point, you've actually filed a lawsuit. You filed a finding. The claim is that you have gotten no response.
We petitioned to have the butterfly listed on the under the Endangered Species Act, and we got no response to that. So we filed a 60-day notice saying we were going to sue if they didn't act on our petition. And this was U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who was supposed to respond to this. They didn't respond, and so we did file a lawsuit earlier this month asking them to act on our petition.
Typically, an organization will file a petition for a finding. A lot of research is put into these things, and they're presented for review, and the process is supposed to involve the government literally responding within so many days, I believe. And they just haven't responded. Well, that doesn't make any sense either. It seems to me that's a negligent on the part of those who have the requirement to respond.
It is, in a sense. On the other hand, the Bush administration has gutted Fish and Wildlife Service's budget so that they don't have the resources to respond to all the listing petitions they get. Typically now, the way they react is to just do nothing unless they're sued. And then they can go to their department head. The head of Fish and Wildlife Service can then say, look, we've been sued. There's a court order, assuming we win, and the court orders them to do something. Well, then they can get the funding to do it. This happens on a number of species. This administration doesn't like the Endangered Species Act. They don't want to see species listed. And, you know, rather than protect habitat to prevent the decline of species to the point where they need to be listed, their response is to just not fund the agency that does the listing.
Now, at this point, why don't we also give some websites and other information for people who may want to learn more about this and participate and follow the story?
PEER's website is PEER, PEER.org.
So it's www.peer.org.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I know that there's also a website, www.biologicaldiversity.org.
Right, that's what I was going to suggest. I think they have more on there.
Right, exactly. So if people want to find out more, now there'll be a link, obviously, on today's webpage for people to find out what's going on. So at this point, you now have filed a lawsuit, and what you're trying to do is get some attention, get some response. Let's say that the government, and likely the government will respond, and they will hopefully respond adequately and try to do what they should, which minimally means start a process of trying to get the off-roaders, helping the off-roaders to, and the environmental community all work together to really just keep people from going into these vegetated zones. That really shouldn't be a political issue. You know, it's not politics. you're talking about using these off-road vehicles to be driven in the dunes. It just seems as if there's a signage, educational programs where peer pressure within the community could result in something. Is that sort of what your initial hope may be?
One would hope so, but I don't expect that. As I said, there's a conservation plan that's being developed. We were told that we could not participate in the group that was developing that conservation plan because we're not in Nevada. They only wanted Nevada residents to participate. So that group includes some local business interests, Shoshone Tribe, representative from Fish and Wildlife, representative from BLM, and ironically, two motorcycle clubs from California, which I just learned the other day. So California Off-Road Vehicle Association and a group in Placerville near me, which apparently they didn't mind off-road vehicle groups in California participating, but they objected to California environmental groups participating. I guess my point is that the plan that they're coming up with, they're going to try to sell as an alternative to listing. They're going to come up with this conservation plan, say we don't need to list because we have this conservation plan. But because that plan was developed without any environmental input, you know, in our opinion, seriously flawed, and won't be a substitute for listing. I don't believe that it, at least the draft that I've seen, does not offer the protection that's going to be necessary to keep the butterfly from extinction.
It sounds as if that seems to be the new strategy, at least by the Bush administration right now, and that is to actively pursue a course by which species will not be listed, and
yes.
Then apparently there will be some sort of conservation plan that's developed to mitigate the situation. I guess in some respects, on the surface, that seems reasonable. Will anything effectively really be done?
Well, I think if they wanted a real conservation plan, they would have included the conservation community. Conservation plan developed by off-roaders who have a different agenda. It seems to me from looking at it that protecting the butterfly is secondary to continuing off-road vehicle use.
I hate to say it, but there has been quite a legacy of strategies that reflect sort of a one-sided approach to these things and ignore oftentimes the other side. It's either this concept of you're with us or you're against us seems to permeate even beyond bigger issues into realms like this. And really, it shouldn't be, because this is our land. It belongs as much to you as it does to the off-road vehicle owners. And then even at a higher level, there's a lot of places, as you say, for people to go off-road, but when it comes to butterflies and a place for them to eat and live, this is the only grounds they have. I guess some people just don't see the value of these butterflies, but it isn't just a butterfly. It has to do with something much larger, which is the integrity of this wonder that is being destroyed. I think back and realize that over the last 100 years, what we've done to the planet in terms of the natural diversity is frightening.
What bothers me and frightens me is that I went to a field trip at the dunes a year or so ago, and there was a large crowd of off-roaders there as well. And I had hoped that we could work collaboratively for a solution. But there was a young girl in her 20-ish or so who, when BLM was explaining the issue and about the butterfly, yelled out, "Who cares about a freaking butterfly?" And I said, "Well, I do," and was sort of booed down by the crowd. And it's like when that generation, and this is the ones that we have to look to in the future to protect these natural resources, when they're so far detached and have so little empathy with the natural world, it's frightening. I mean, to them, it's all about toys. And I know that there are, that certainly not the whole generation, but that anybody could be that, hold something that rare and beautiful in such callous disregard, I found that very distressing.
Well, when I was younger, I didn't have access to those kinds of vehicles, and so if you wanted to experience nature, you kind of had to walk in. In that process, it was a much slower pace, and you noticed a lot more. And in that process of seeing more and experiencing more, you began to really sense the extraordinary sensitivity and interactions that exist that make nature so profoundly powerful, and that's what fascinated me. Unfortunately, as the world keeps getting faster and faster, and as the sound bites become shorter and shorter, and the clips on TV become ever more shorter, and then the vehicles themselves become faster, there's a point reached where I think there's portions of that generation really have never had the chance to really take the time to experience what you're talking about.
Well, I think you're right. And I think also, as the country gets more urban, there's people whose only experience with wild places is on a vehicle.
The truth is there are people who probably within their lifetime will have never literally touched the earth. Living in an apartment and go down the stairs and hop in your car and drive on pavement to go to work and come back and literally never touch the earth.
Right. Well, there's that whole phenomenon of the website where people could use a joystick to actually kill animals.
Yes, right.
Did you hear about that?
Yes, yeah. The shooting from your recliner.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. But somewhere an animal actually was shot as a result of that.
That's right.
So, to me, that speaks volumes about our lack of connection to the natural world.
How are you trying to reach out to the off-road vehicle community? If there's anything that I can do, I'm certainly happy to try. It just seems as if there would be a way to do this, although it may take time. But if the government isn't going to respond, then one has to appeal to the off-road community. And are they responsive at all to listening to your story?
Because I work with off-road vehicle issues a lot, I know a lot of off-roaders, and I've actually gone off-roading with some of them, and we do talk. The way I feel is that BLM is supposed to be managing the area, and when they exclude one stakeholder completely, or one group of stakeholders completely, they're not setting up a situation that makes communication even possible. I mean, the thing that needs to happen here is that BLM needs to get all the interested people in a room, or at least representative of all the different points of view in a room and come up with a plan that is responsive to all sides and not just one side. But, the off-road community feels no need to talk to us when they know that BLM doesn't want us at the table.
I guess that's where we are at this point. I don't really know what to say. I know that the current administration is fairly well committed to this stance, and we'll just have to persevere and carry on kind of one battle at a time.
Yeah, I mean, we're just sort of trying to hold the tide back at this point and hope for changes in leadership soon.
Karen Schumbach is the California Director of PEER, which is the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Again, let's talk about that website. It's www.peer.org. And you can also find out about this particular issue at www.biologicaldiversity.org. Karen Schumbach, thanks a lot for adding your voice. And I'm going to take a personal interest in this and see if there isn't some way that we can find a creative solution. But I also agree with you totally that the BLM is negligent here in carrying out their responsibility. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We can all expect to hear many more stories this year of the struggles that will increase as people take a stand for the Earth. You'll hear them all when your Voice of the Earth returns each week, and you can hear the call of the wild through the archives, which are ready for the listening. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again, when your Voice of the Earth sings out here on the Wild Side News.